Welcome to this episode of the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I am here with Hallie Sherman, who I'm so excited to have you on tonight, Hallie.
Thank you so much for having me.
We had already started talking, asking questions, going over what we're going to talk about, and I'm pulling you on pretty quickly because I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. Before we get into the meat of what you didn't learn in graduate school, tell us why, how you became an SLP.
Sure. So my story might be different than others, maybe. I went to undergrad as a complete undecided student. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't know if I wanted to go into working with children, education, business. I was being told by each of my parents to go one route or the other. And I decided, let's just go in undecided and figure it out as I went along. And I met a friend freshman year who told me that she was going for speech pathology. I'm like, what is that? She explained it to me. It sounded somewhat interesting. So the following year, I took the intro to speech pathology class and fell in love and never looked back. I dove right in, jumped into all the classes. I was looking for every internship possible so I can be surrounded by SLPs to learn what they do, how they do it. Where could I possibly work? Let me build up that resume so I can get into graduate school. I became, I wouldn't say obsessed, but I was very determined as an undergraduate student, and I just never looked back. And since then, I moved back home after undergrad, went to graduate school, and went straight to, I first started working in a special ed preschool, and then I jumped into different leave replacement positions here on Long Island in New York until I finally found a tenure track position. And now I'm working with fifth and sixth grade students and loving every second of every day. Every day is different, challenging, yet inspiring.
Excellent. That's one of the things I love about my job. And I'm in a totally different setting than you.
I love working in a school surrounded by other professionals and the children. And the best part is I give them back after 30 minutes. So yeah. I can't go wrong.
Kind of like a grandparent. I'm a grandparent, and our little one comes over and she eats candy because grandpa gives it to her, and cookies. And then we play and we color and we paint and we send her home.
I love that. I'm the grandparent of the school where I give them treats and send them back all hyped up back to class.
Wonderful. Wonderful. It's nice that you have that special place in your heart for those that you work with. You and I met each other through a podcasting Facebook group for SLPs. And I put out there who would like to be on this new series I'm starting. And it's What I Didn't Learn in Grad School. And you were like, I would love to be on. Tell us, you said you've worked with grad students for a number of years. So you're really coming in with some good advice.
Yes. So not only did I make mistakes myself and things I learned in graduate school, but I've also seen so many graduate students throughout the years excel, struggle, feel overwhelmed, all the above. And I've been there as a support, a person to guide them and encourage them that they can do it, and always to remember their why. Why did they go to graduate school? Someone believed in them and saw that they had the potential, so they do. And I would love to share what I've noticed and learned from them over the years.
What has been a consistent trend that you have noticed that's increasing with the students coming out?
A lot of students are lacking confidence in themselves. They're overthinking what they need to do to be successful. They are eager to please. They come from that graduate school mentality of I have to get an A. It has to be perfect. And I'm always telling them, it doesn't have to be perfect. First of all, B's will get you the C's, CCC, SLP. But also, B's will get you the C's. But also that, like, I'm trying to give them real practical advice, where I understand that in their clinicals, they expected to write 10-page lesson plans and stick to it and be so rigid and to the point where in the schools and in real life, that you're going to burn out that way. You can't have 100 unique lessons each and every day. You're going to be up late laminating and prepping. And that's not real life when you are out in the real world and have children and a husband, like when you're married, all that fun stuff, like you can't be doing all that. So you have to slow down and think, okay, how can I take one book, take one YouTube video, take one game and target as many goals as possible? And it doesn't have to be perfect, but it can still be effective.
I love that. Some of the things, if I can add to that beautiful thought, sometimes, you know, I'm a professor and I work in the settings with the students, and they walk in and they've got all of their materials and their lesson plans are all around the materials, and it needs to be around the person they're working with. I was a GA when I was in grad school. I was a GA for Lynn Larrigan. She's since passed on. When she passed on, there was an Irish funeral march down the streets of Spokane. Loved it. She was very instrumental in my clinical skill development. And I was getting ready to walk into a session one day, and I had my lesson plan. I had all my materials. I had my game. The little kiddo with vocal nodules. And if you know me, I'm not keen on kids. And so this was already, I'm definitely in the adult realm. This was already a challenging, you know, client for me. And she met me at the door, which is right across from her office. And she took all of my materials, except a pencil, a piece of paper, and a piece of string. And I had to learn to step away from the lesson plan, to step away from the materials, and really, really focus. And so I love what you say. Enough is, you are enough. Take what you need and go enjoy, have fun.
Mm-hmm. Focus on the kids in front of you rather than the materials in front of you. Focus on what they are doing and not doing and how you're going to teach it to them and help them see success versus them always needing you to be prompting them versus who cares what the book is, who cares what the activity is.
Right.
Your students never know if it didn't go as planned. They'll see it on your face. That's what you got to hide it. Got to have that poker face on at all times.
I had a little kid who thought I was Santa Claus, Mrs. Santa Claus, and I think I kept that poker face on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a trend that you've seen students come out. They're lacking confidence, eager to please. And you've given some words of advice for that. Stay focused on who you're working with. And enjoy that. What is a trend that you have seen that they've come out better with?
They're really great with technology, graduate students now, especially more than me. They're teaching me tips and tricks. I'm like, when it comes to Google Slides and finding things on websites, they know how to do some shortcuts that I just didn't know existed. Pinterest and Teachers Pay Teachers didn't exist when I was in graduate school. Mm-hmm. I had to do, there wasn't even Google Images. I had to have a permanent marker and index cards and make something out of nothing. So they not that they're relying on it, but they are so good with technology and they can find things faster than I can. So use those skills that you have of knowing how to navigate the World Wide Web and find some great interactive tools. They also know things about like video games and anime and all the things that the kids are into these days that I'm too old for. So
different language.
Mm-hmm. So hey, use it to your benefit. If you know about things that they know about, that's a great way to build rapport with your students.
Absolutely. Enter their world.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the listeners can't hear you, but I can't see you. They can hear you and I can see you, and you are like seriously ready for podcasting. You've got all of the gear that I wished I had and may have to ask for, you know, for my whole family for Christmas. You have a TPT site. You have SLP Elevate, which is a membership site. You have a three times a year retreat. You have a podcast. Tell us about the podcast, because that's what I see right here. And then I have a reason, because I want you to come back after you've explained who you are. I want you to tell us how you got there, because many students don't know they can do these great things.
Sure. So about a year and a half ago, I started my SLP Coffee Talk podcast because I wanted to have more ways for SLPs to get access to just practical tips and tricks. So I release a podcast every Monday morning. That's why it's called Coffee Talk. It's the jolt of, or the caffeine you need to start the week or day, that inspiration you need. It's very short, bite-sized episodes that you can digest in a short commute or while just sipping your cup of morning coffee. And I, like I said, so I started my Teachers Meet Teacher store like 8-9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, things just slowly developed over there. But I love being able to podcast and be in someone's ear, encouraging them that they can do it. And they have, here's some extra tips and tricks to help them get there.
Did you know about all of these things when you were first starting in your career?
No. I'm a complete introvert. I really believe so. Mm-hmm. So you say, if you told me 8-9 years ago that I would be putting myself on the, as my daughters like to call it, the radio, I would have laughed at them. If they said that I would have had my face on like an Instagram post, I would have said, stop that nonsense. But when I was early in my career, I was, like I mentioned earlier, I was hopping from leave replacement to leave replacement because there was no permanent jobs here on Long Island for school SLPs in a public school setting. But I was determined to get there. But I was starting to feel, I don't want to say down on my luck, but not feeling as confident in myself because I wasn't where I wanted to be professionally. And I learned about blogging and I figured, hey, I could start a blog. I figured it would be like a diary of my therapy ideas. I did not know about anything about blogging. I created it myself. I had no idea what I was doing. And people started finding it and coming back for more and reaching out saying, please share more therapy ideas. This is helping me. There's nothing out there for SLPs working with older speech students. So I kept coming back. And it gave me the encouragement. If someone else needs ideas and advice, I need to keep going. So I have.
must mean you have some good materials.
It's what I'm using with my students that I found that works or doesn't work for that matter.
One of the things that I enjoy, because I work with students, I carry clinic on Fridays. It's really fun to watch them, the clinical fellows, not students, learn to, some of the students are competitive. So it's nice when they begin their clinical fellowship to show them this is such a collaborative event, such a safe setting for you to be in. Go find these resources from other passionate SLPs who write and create in their areas, because that is what's working.
So true. Especially nowadays, there's so much out there, depending on your style, your philosophies, the setting you work in, you can find something to inspire you, motivate you. We all need those fresh ideas every once in a while. I get sick and tired of doing the same thing each and every day. Mm-hmm.
So you've been on the front lines of watching students come out and they've got this classroom knowledge. They're working on implementing their clinic skills. Any words of advice for improving that classroom to clinic connection?
Take advantage of the people around you that are doing it with you. Ask questions. You don't have to know everything. You know enough, but you don't have to know everything. Our scope of practice is so large. And any new job you start, you need to ask questions. No one expects you to know everything and the culture of the company or school you're in. Don't be afraid to ask questions. It doesn't mean you're not competent. It means that you care and you want to do the best job possible.
And when I sit and do medical charts, I'll come across a medical term I don't know and I'll look it up. We don't have to know everything.
No, there's disabilities that come my way or goals that I haven't worked on in forever. Like I've had maybe one cochlear implant case in my entire career. If I have another one tomorrow, I need to do some PDs and reading up and making sure that I know exactly what I'm doing to best work with that student. So
can you pull out three things? This might be putting you on the spot. Three things that you did not know in graduate school that you now know.
Oh my God, so much. One, I didn't know how to work with older speech students. And that's what I'm working with now. I did my one placement in a preschool and I did the other working with second to fifth grade. And now I'm working with fifth and sixth grade. And I did at one of my jobs, one of my leave replacements was in a middle school and high school. I didn't learn that. That you can't have every experience in grad school. It's only 2 years. There's not enough time in a day to test out every single setting. So when I first started, I had to ask around, what did the SLP before me do? Hey, let me talk to the reading teachers. Let me talk to the special educators. What do you notice with these students? How can I support and help you? I had to take some professional development workshops and read some articles. There's tons of articles on now with reading comprehension and the SLP connection. I had to do my research to figure out how can I support these students differently, but effectively. And I didn't learn that in graduate school. So I had to learn it all on the job.
Good example.
That's one. Number two, there was no technology or anything like that. When the world shut down for COVID, I was forced to start doing therapy over Google Meet. I didn't know anything about that. I had to, again, look for SLPs that have been doing teletherapy for a while. That's not something that existed back then. And number three, technology has changed so much. When I was in graduate school, there were no iPads and SLPs, AAC on iPads and apps for that. We learned about token boards and some Dynavox stuff, like some basic tech. I mean, that's what was around then in the popular kind of tools and devices. So when I heard that maybe I might have a student with an iPad, I went to a workshop to learn about ProloQuo2Go. I'm like, let me just learn what I need to do to be effective.
So you went and got the resources, got the knowledge, learned, asked questions. Did you seek out mentors?
Not as many as I should have early on. I didn't take advantage of my CF supervisor as much. I felt like I needed to prove that I knew what I was doing versus asking a lot of questions. I definitely made that mistake. But I do remember when I first got hired for my first position and I knew I was going to be working with a student with a Dynavox. I did go to my professor that taught the AAC class and said, help me out. Like, I need help. I don't know what I'm doing. So they were eager and happy to meet with me during office hours. No one else was there. So I got that one-on-one support that I needed.
Mm-hmm. You know, you hit on something crucial that we haven't talked about on this series yet. And that is, so many clinical fellows, when they start, they feel they really need to impress their supervisor. So they're not as transparent and as authentic as they need to be. And therefore, you know, supervisors or clinical fellow supervisors, we think everything's okay and they're understanding everything and things are going all right. As you know, the work that I do at Fresh SLP, I find out, no, the things sometimes are not okay. What words of advice would you give to the clinical fellow who does feel she or he needs to impress their clinical fellowship supervisor?
First, think about the question that you're having or the struggle that you're having. Is it normal? Is it something that you can look up and try on your own? Can you troubleshoot? Because yes, you don't want to go to them for everything. Yes, but you go from graduate school where you look over your shoulder and they're standing right there, to they might not even be in the building that you're in. And you might have to just be touching base via email once a month. That might be the only communication you have. So yes, first think about, is this really an emergency? Can it be something that you can research on your own? Can you troubleshoot it? And then if you still are unsure, ask, what's the worst that happens? They say, go figure it out. They might be happy to answer, and it might be something that is really worth asking and getting that support from.
I've had students, clinical fellows, ask me, and I don't know the answer because I don't know everything. And I say, go figure it out and double back.
Mm-hmm. And let me know, because I want to know that too.
Yeah, it's that collaboration. Again, what are some words of advice that somebody gave you that you did not follow, that you were glad you did not follow?
Ooh, that I'm glad I didn't follow. Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh my goodness, this is a hard one.
It's a good question.
Ooh. Some I had people say work in private practice where you can have a more of a flexible schedule when you have kids and this and that. I'm glad I stuck it out and worked in the schools. I do love the population that you get to work with, the collaboration with other professionals, not just SLPs. I like being that one person in that student school day where they know they can feel successful and confident and have fun. Where they're upset. Like I had a student today tell me, I was absent last week on his day of speech. He's like, "Where have you been?" And I'm like, "I'm so sorry. Am I allowed to be absent? I'm sorry. Everything's okay though." So I'm glad I didn't take that advice. You know, every once in a while when I have to miss certain things with my children and in their schools, I'm a little upset that I didn't have some flexible schedules. I have summers off. I have school holidays off. I'm able to be home. I'm able to take my kids off the bus when they get home from school. So I'm happy I stuck it out.
I'm so happy that you're so happy in your school setting.
I really am. When I first got this position with working with fifth and sixth graders, I was like, really? When I went on the interview, I had no idea what age group they were hiring for. And they were like, yeah, it's in a fifth and sixth grade building. I'm like, really? This is where I might be stuck for the rest of my life. And I'm glad I took the job because I can't imagine working with the younger ones anymore. It's not for me.
So in the true spirit of what you did learn in graduate school, what words of advice do you have about interviewing?
Ooh, I have a few. One thing is listen to the questions they're asking. You might start seeing a trend if you're going to several different districts or positions, you might start to see some trends that you can start preparing for. Also, if you know anyone that works in those districts, especially now with social media, you can always post in any group and say, hey, do you mind if I DM you or whatever, but knowing about the culture of those buildings and what kind of person they might be looking for. But also, you're also interviewing them. So mm-hmm. You don't want to be too critical, but you want to come in with some questions where you can feel like you can decide if it's a place for you or not. You don't want to just settle for any job that offers you a position.
Sounds like good advice. Final question. What words of advice do you have for the newer SLP, the fresh SLP, getting started?
Always remember your why. Why did you go into this field? It's not easy. Getting into graduate was tough. Passing the praxis was tough. Finishing graduate school is tough. Getting a job is tough. But you did it all because you fell in love with the field. And remember your why. For those tough days when you want to cry, crawl into a ball or call in sick because you just don't want to do it. Remember your why and remember the impact you're making on these clients, these students, these whoever you're working with, that someone's relying on you to make such an amazing impact. We get the pleasure of providing children or whoever you're working with each and every day with communication and the ability to be a successful student, successful communicator, and person in society. And we really are, parents are looking at us to make an impact. Teachers are looking at us for help. And we get to do that each and every day and get a paycheck as a bonus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent note to end on. Thank you for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.